Hello, I am Joshua P. Warren, and this is Joshua P. Warren Daily. And I have seen a lot of penises this weekend. Perhaps I should explain. Not exactly the kind of statement you just want to float around out there in outer space without clarification. In 1,000 years, they're looking at the Akashic Record. What did he mean? Well, look, let me explain. So, you know, I'm here in Las Vegas, Nevada. And I love it here because it's like an island in the middle of the desert. But I loved also being on an island surrounded by water when I was in Puerto Rico. And I was snorkeling. And, you know, I really enjoy being surrounded by just clear, beautiful, warm water that I can just go out and explore naturally. And so when I'm here, when I'm working here in Las Vegas, there are many occasions where I really start missing having that aquatic experience. And yes, I do have a swimming pool here at the complex where my condo is and all that. But still, sometimes I'm looking for something a little more elaborate, especially when I know that I have a very stressful period coming up. And there are going to be so many things happening over the next couple of weeks. I mean, the Discovery Channel is coming here this week, and we're going to be filming the rest of this month. And I have a fundraiser going on I'll tell you about. And there's just a lot of stuff going on. And so when I know I have a stressful period come up, sometimes I say, you know what? I think I just need to go unannounced, get away from all my technology pretty much, go to one of these spas. Because I like going to these elaborate spas where they have all these different pools and waterfalls of different temperatures, and you can kind of relax and chill out, and it takes you into a meditative theta state of brain. And so, therefore, I kind of got hooked on going to spas because when I was working as an event coordinator, producing conferences at the Grove Park Inn Resort and Spa in Asheville, North Carolina, I got to experience that spa, which they call the finest spa in North America. And let me tell you, I think they're right. Now, I mean, that spa is better than any spa I found here in Las Vegas or anywhere else I've traveled to. However, at the Grove Park Inn, the last time I went to the spa, I must say the water temperature was a little off. It was a little too cool, in my opinion. But anyway, look. So if you go to these spas in other cities, though, they're very expensive. And in Vegas, because there are so many resorts, you can go to some really high-end spas, and it doesn't cost a lot of money. So that's one of the nice things. So sometimes I'll wake up here, you know, I'll be on some weird schedule, and I'll just so happen to wake up fresh at the crack of dawn, and I say, you know what, today I don't have anything pressing me so hard that I can't go and just make it a spa day, you know. So I'll quietly get dressed, and so I won't wake up Warren, you know, and then I'll leave a note on the fridge, here's where I'm going to be in case I get murdered, you'll know where to start looking for my body, and then I will Uber myself to one of these spas. So that I don't have to worry about driving through traffic or parking or, hey, if I want to have a shot of some liquor or whatever, I don't have to worry about anything. So I went to this really, really high-end spa. And when I got there, the spa attendant, as usual, you know, was really, I mean, I'm talking like this is one of the most expensive places in all of Vegas. But there's a really good deal on the spa, okay? So, and, you know, sometimes I may or may not get a massage. Most of the time, I just chill out in these different pools, like I was saying. So the spa attendant, he's taking me around. And he's saying, well, here's where we have the locker room, and here's where the bathrooms are. And then he goes, now, this is the doorway where, you know, because once you pass through this doorway, it's clothing optional. And so don't bring a cell phone past this doorway or anything with a camera on it. If you need to use your cell phone, you know, go over here to this lounge. I'm like, okay, no problem there. Because I always wear swim trunks when I go to the spa. And apparently, I am like an old, boring fuddy-duddy. Because I'm telling you, you have men there of all ages, from all nationalities. And the moment they race through that threshold, woohoo, they're like toddlers, the towel goes off. A beam of sunlight hits their huevos. Indiana Jones has found the ark. And it's just like suddenly we're in a new realm full of just naked men. And I'm the only guy who's sitting around, Mr. Boring with my shorts on. Cricket, cricket, cricket. Hey, look, and you know what? I know they look at me and maybe they think I'm a little odd. Well, I was born in the mountains of Western North Carolina. I'm not used to just slanging my side piece out there because that's what the cool kids are doing. And trust me, it's not a matter of who's got the best gear, because when you're looking around the room at all these different men, it's like a little United Nations of naked men. You're looking at some of these guys and you're saying, the aliens are here. I don't know how much more proof that we need, but that does not look human right there. That looks like something straight out of the movies. So I don't, yeah, I'm not inclined to just, pull my stuff out and then we pretend like it's not out and we just carry on. Let's just not even talk about the elephant in the room that all of our penises are out. And also, I find it especially uncomfortable when some of these rooms and these spas are just too small. Like, my favorite spas are big ones with high ceilings and vast areas with lots of different pools. You can kind of spread out and do your own thing. But at a lot of these spas, the rooms are so small that, like, when you're in there, these naked guys are kind of getting up in your space a little bit. And sometimes you feel like you're on the frontier being caged in by a circle of bayonets. Like, hey, mister, you stay put right there. You're on the business end of this thing. And you're just like, okay, I think I've had enough. So I didn't spend as much time at that spa because I just felt a little, it was a little too compressed for me. But you know what? It was not as relaxing as I was hoping, but it was a distraction, I can tell you that. And sometimes that's all you need is a distraction to take your mind off something so that you can relax a little bit more in another part of your brain or whatever. Now, I know you're wondering, like, why the hell are you telling us this story, Josh? Please, please let this be going somewhere. Well, it is. It is going there. Yeah, but just for the record, it doesn't always have to go somewhere because it's called Joshua P. Warren Daily. I'm just telling you. But it so happens this story does go somewhere. So after I left, and I did feel, I felt refreshed. I mean, I got a nice shower afterward, and I had been chilling out in some really hot water and stuff. So I walked down the street, popped into a couple casinos, played some games, and so finally, I was like, all right, well, it's time to head back home. And since I am a such an a respectful figure, I figured I always bring some food back, so that when I come back, I have something, a nice little treat for Lauren. So I went to this nice Chinese restaurant, got a bunch of different, lo mein and egg rolls and crab rangoons and all this stuff. And then sometimes when you're in Vegas, it's actually easier to just jump into a taxi cab than it is to orchestrate an Uber, just the way they have things set up. So I ended up getting into a taxi cab. Tell the guy, where I want to go. Now, this cab driver, he as soon as I got in, he's just like the nicest dude ever. He's from some other part of the world. I don't know exactly where he's from, but he spoke with an accent. And he was just like, how's your day going, man? And I said, oh, it's great. I said, I'm having just a relaxing day to myself. And he says, oh, yeah, every day is like that for me. And he's just like super happy. This guy's so laid back and happy. Kind of uncommon, really, for a taxi cab driver. And right after that, I almost got killed because he took a turn when he should not have taken a turn. And this car, I mean, it's one of those like slow motion deals where I see this car zooming at a very high rate of speed directly to my door, because I'm in the back seat on the passenger side, and this car is zooming straight at me. And there was a moment where I saw my life flash before my eyes, and the car goes and screeches, and I'm just like, I actually close my eyes to get to prepare for the fucking impact of this car just crunching in. This car screeched like right, I must have been an inch away. I mean, my God, my heart was racing. This guy didn't break a sweat. He just kept right on talking like, and he starts telling me, he said, and I swear to you, this is not a joke. I'm telling you, hand to God, this. He said, you know, I once had a near-death experience in this car. I said, oh, really? What happened? He said, well, I was driving. He says, this was about 20 years ago. And we got hit. And it was a horrible accident. And I died. It's like, okay, well, that's interesting. Are you an angel? Like, what? And he says, I saw the tunnel of light. He says, the whole thing. You know, he said, all. And he goes, they told me, you have to go back. And I said, I don't want to go back. It's so beautiful here. He says, the same old story. You know, this is kind of like a Dr. Evan Alexander type situation. He says, no, they told him, you're not ready, you have to go back. So they sent him back. He said he came back. It was a miraculous thing. I don't know what happened to his passenger. I don't think we made it into that department. But he said that when he came back, he was a completely changed person. He said he did not worry about anything. He said that he could not eat meat. He said he tried and tried and tried. He said before he used to eat meat every day. He says if he would try to eat meat, it would just taste disgusting and it would make him want to throw up. He couldn't eat meat. And gosh, he went down a list of things of just like, basically he was incapable of worrying and of being stressed out anymore. And he said he doesn't drink, he doesn't smoke, he just has no desire to do any of that kind of stuff. And he said right after this happened, a friend and kind of spontaneously said, hey, here's a book for you. And he felt like that this had come into his life for a reason. And you hear that about a lot of these pieces of literature, like the Kybalion. People say, this thing came into my life at this time for a reason. So he said, I was given this book called The Power of Now. And he said, this is, in my opinion, the best book ever written. He says, I read it every single day. He says, I've read it every day for 20 years. And I always get something new out of it. He said, I always get something new out of it. And he said, you know, like it's a bestseller. Oprah Winfrey's behind it, you know, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I may have come across this book. I wouldn't doubt it if I have. But I don't have a specific memory of it. So I was like, all right. Well, I'm going to make note of this, because he was implying like this book came into my life and now it's coming into your life. And so now I, Joshua P. Warren, am putting it into your life, even though I haven't read it yet. But here's what I did do. I sat down when I got home. I have ordered it. I haven't received it yet, but I did go to the Wikipedia page, and I'm going to read to you a little bit of information about this book that he said is what was so in line with the way he feels after having died and been told he had to come back. This is the thing he says is just the accurate way of capturing the vibe, the frequency, the mindset that you're supposed to be on. So The Power of Now, A Guide to Spiritual Enlightenment, is a book by Eckhart Tolle, T-O-L-L-E. And I haven't done a lot of research on this fella. He's a German. He's 71 years old. And so again, I haven't had a lot of time. This is just all new stuff that I'm telling you about. I haven't had time to research him, but it says published in the late 1990s, the book was recommended by Oprah Winfrey and has been translated into 33 languages. As of 2009, it was estimated that 3 million copies had been sold just in North America. So here's the overview. The book draws from a variety of spiritual traditions and has been described by one reviewer as, quote, Buddhism mixed with mysticism and a few references to Jesus Christ, a sort of New Age reworking of Zen, end quote. It uses these traditions to describe, quote, a belief system based on living in the present moment, end quote. Its core message is that people's emotional problems are rooted in their identification with their minds. The author writes that an individual should be aware of their present moment instead of losing themselves in worry and anxiety about past or future. Goes on to say here, according to the book, only the present moment is important, and both an individual's past and future is created by their thoughts. The author maintains that people's insistence that they have control of their life is an illusion that, quote, only brings you pain, end quote. The book also describes methods of relaxation and meditation to aid readers in anchoring themselves in the present. These suggestions include slowing down life by avoiding multitasking, spending time in nature, and letting go of worries about the future. Some of the concepts contained in The Power of Now, such as the human ego and its negative effects on happiness, are further elaborated in the author's later books. All right, so again, I haven't read this book, but I'm reading this information about it, and it says the author maintains that people's insistence they have control of their life is an illusion that only brings pain. I don't particularly subscribe to that, and you know that, because I think that there are things that we do not have control over, and there are things that we do have control over. I think to say that you don't have control over anything puts you more into a victim mindset, which is one of the worst things that can possibly happen. And I, in my book, use The Force, A Jedi's Guide to the Law of Attraction. I justified that opinion, but I do understand how if somebody wants to believe, well, I have no control, so screw it, maybe this could help you feel like you're viewing things the right way. I'm not sure. But let's look a little bit more at this. Selected chapters. The chapters of the book are Introduction. Next, You Are Not Your Mind. Next, Consciousness. Okay, well, I tell you what, let me just talk a little bit about the summaries here, the cliff notes. It says, in the book's introduction, the author relates his past experiences of continuous anxiety with periods of suicidal depression. Later, when he was 29 years old, he had a personal epiphany and writes, quote, I heard the words, resist nothing, as if spoken inside my chest, end quote. He relates that he felt as if he were falling into a void, and afterward, quote, there was no more to fear, end quote. They talk about chapter two, which is called Consciousness, the Way Out of Pain. In chapter two, he tells the reader they must recognize their personal ego, quote, without the ego creating an antagonistic response to its own denial or destruction, end quote. Without the ego creating an antagonistic response to its own denial or destruction. Okay. According to the book, quote, the pain body, which, and that's hyphenated as it's like it's one thing, the pain body. The pain body consists of trapped life energy that has split off from your total energy field and has temporarily become autonomous through the unnatural process of mind identification, end quote. Did you get that? Did you get that? I'll read it again. The pain body he says, consists of trapped life energy that has split off from your total energy field and has temporarily become autonomous through the unnatural process of mind identification. All right. Well, look, I'm not giving you this information because that I like it. I'm just saying this is what this taxi driver said. So, okay, chapter 3. The author writes, in the normal mind-identified or unenlightened state of consciousness, the power and creative potential that lie concealed in the now are completely obscured by psychological time. You cannot find yourself by going into the past. You can find yourself by coming into the present. Life is now. There was never a time when your life was not now, nor will there ever be. Okay, well, that makes sense. In chapter 4, he says, tomorrow's bills are not the problem and can be a core delusion that changes a mere situation, event, or emotion into a reason for suffering and unhappiness. The book also calls waiting a state of mind that we should snap ourselves out of. So look, there, just based upon what I'm reading here, there is some value. But I also think that some of this stuff is worded in a way that's not impactful. And I've gotten bigger on that concept as I've gotten older. It kind of takes you back to the Hemingway philosophy, like just be direct, be clear, be crisp. I love books by Thomas Wolfe that are, to me, poetic. And they are books that describe something that happened historically in a time before we had motion picture cameras and audio recorders and all that so readily available to record things. It was wonderful that we had a guy like Thomas Wolfe in Asheville, North Carolina in the early 1900s so that he could try to describe everything he was seeing and smelling and feeling and hearing and like try to capture it best he could. But that's one version of documenting reality. I think in a self-help or self-transformation type book, what you really want to do is be clear and concise and say, here's a sentence that ought to make sense to you. Boom, you know. Now here's another sentence that ought to make sense to you. Boom. Even if you feel like you're writing down, you know, you're writing toward a younger audience, fine, who cares? So that's why I think people love Use the Force so much, because that book that I wrote now 4 years ago, it's got such a fan base because the people like the fact that I wrote it in crisp, clear sentences. That, you know, you can pack a lot of mind-boggling information into that type of format. So anyway, he said this is the book he reads every day, and every time he reads it, he gets something new out of it. And that may or may not be a good thing to say about a book, because maybe the reason he gets something new out of it every day is because there's a lot of wiggle room in the book. I don't know. Like I say, I haven't read it. But I thought it was really interesting that he told me this story right after I'd almost gotten killed in his taxi cab. And so, again, now I'm passing this along to you. But do you think that was the end of my day? Hell no! Hell no. So I went home. Lauren had just woken up, and she says, well, I wasn't planning to have Chinese for my breakfast, but it works, you know, so it was some good stuff. So we ate, and I was like, all right, time for me to take a nap. So I went, I took a nap. I woke up later that evening, and I said, Lauren, we know we're going to be busy as hell over the next 2 weeks. Why don't we go to the movies tonight? We'll Uber ourselves to the movies. Because there is this new movie out called Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. And I'll get back to that in a minute. So Lauren and I, we got into probably the best Uber ever, because when we got in, there are these big TV screens on the back of the chairs or the seats in front of us. And then I got in and I said, "Well, are we in the cash cab?" And he's like, "Maybe." And the guy hits the button and all these multicolored disco lights come on. And for a second, I thought maybe I was in the cash cab. Boy, that would be a good day if Lauren and I got in the cash cab. So, surely you've seen that show. Well, anyway, we went to see this movie, which is the first attempt at adapting Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. Now, I'm in my 40s, and so for those of you who are either too young or too old or whatever, let me give you an idea about what this means. So, Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark is a three-book series. The first one was published in 1981, and the second one, called More Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, was published in 1984. And then the last one, Scary Stories 3, More Tales to Chill Your Bones, was published in 1991. These were written by a man named Alvin Schwartz. And Alvin Schwartz, he died in 1992, right after his last one came out. He was 64 years old. He was born in Brooklyn. He died in Princeton, New Jersey, from lymphoma. So he had a type of cancer. But one of the things about these books is that, if you look up the author, here's what they say about Alvin Schwartz. Alvin Schwartz was an American author and journalist who wrote more than 50 books dedicated to and dealing with topics such as folklore and wordplay, many of which were intended for young readers. And so, growing up during the period of time when I grew up, it was always common to find Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark in any library, whether it was elementary school or middle school or high school. You would always find these books. And the books were striking because, for one thing, the illustrator, a man named Stephen Gamel, who is still alive, the illustrator did such a job of creating these kind of simplistic but nightmarish images, a lot of them just black and white, that talk about an atmosphere. You know, I remember when I was reading these books as a young person, I didn't think they were the best books in the world, but I did think that they did an amazing job of capturing an atmosphere. And so basically what you would do is you'd read one story, and they were all kind of old-fashioned stories. They all gave you the impression that maybe these were stories that were happening in the early 1900s or the 1800s or something like that. And so you'd read a story, and sometimes it wouldn't even be a story, it'd just be a poem or a song. You'd read a story with this nightmarish illustration, and it would just capture this one sort of moment in time or this moment in your imagination. And then, you know, you go to the next one and it's like, now something completely different, you know, like Monty Python. Now for something completely different. And you'd have a whole new chapter there with a whole new story, whole new illustration. And the great thing was, it was digestible. You know, you would just go through each section, each chapter, and you'd be in a different world. It was a different setting. It was kind of a creep show sort of thing. So when I heard they were going to make a movie out of this, I thought, boy, I hope they do a good job. Well, it turns out that, and here's my opinion, and I'm just being honest with you because I don't want to try to start problems in the media world, but I'm just going to tell you. I used to read this book on Speaking of Strange, which was my radio show that I did for 15 years with Clear Channel and iHeart, and I can't read stories and stuff like that on my podcast like I used to be able to do on the radio show because I own this podcast and I have to go out and get the rights. But when you're working for Clear Channel and iHeart, I mean, they already license a lot of stuff and make that a lot easier for you. So I, at Halloween, I mean, like, I would sit down and I would read, oh, here's a spooky story from this book. And then I would say, here, one of my favorites was the one called Harold, yeah. And then I'd read a poem or whatever, you know, and I would just include that in my lineup of Halloween stuff. This treatment of this man's work by this film production is a great example of a phenomenon that I see in the movie business and in the TV business all the time. And the phenomenon is called, wow, this is really great. Let's change it and fuck it up. This is so good. We love it. Let's change it and fuck it up. And it happens over and over and over again. And I've seen this myself. I have pitched things to one person. And that one person at some big network says, this is good. Let's do this. And then as soon as everybody else smells that a project has been greenlit, there's blood in the air. And suddenly, a crush of people come in who all want to make their contribution to justify their paycheck. And by the time all of the hyenas are done, the thing has been ripped and diluted into so many different directions that it's not the thing you even started out with. It's very disappointing. So let me say this. We went to see the Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark movie. And I do believe that the filmmakers had noble intentions. And I do believe that, you know, they said it was inspired by those stories. But the problem is, what they did basically was just create a whole new story with a group of kids. Like, out of nowhere, okay, we got a group of kids with a little bit of social stuff sprinkled in there. And then we create this really cheesy plot device that kind of ties everything together. And these kids are on this adventure where they happen to encounter different scenarios that are similar to a scenario that was presented in one of the books. Okay, so you've created something totally different that, like, I thought I was very disappointed with it. And maybe young people will enjoy it just as it is on its own two legs. But for me, watching something like that after having enjoyed the books, it showed me, like, this is so different than the books that it's a completely different experience. And so basically, when the reason those books were popular is because they were presented in vignette fashion, right? So again, you have this story, now this. Well, what's wrong with just taking them and saying, let's faithfully reproduce this on screen? Let's do this, you know, creep show style or whatever, where you say, here's this story, and let's just use the book almost like a screenplay and say, here's this story. Now, something completely different. Chapter 2, here's this story, you know? That would have kicked ass! That would have kicked ass, and it would actually have been a much more valuable product, because there is some true, like, adult literary value to this folklore. And where do kids get their money from? Adults. So you could have made something that would have been appealing to kids and adults that would have been more profitable if you just stuck with how it was laid out there. And man, that's why, you know, some of the novels that I've written, I will never try to turn any of my novels into movies, but if somebody wants to do that someday, let me tell you something. If you don't faithfully reproduce that novel the way I wrote it, then I will curse your ass from the afterlife. And you can, you know, don't fuck it up. Don't fuck it up. If you like it enough to say, I want to make this into a movie, make it into a movie the way it was written. Don't take it and say, well, this inspired me to do this. Well, then you're just shitting all over it is what you're doing. Because, you know, if you don't like it enough to reproduce it faithfully, you don't like it enough to reproduce it or adapt it at all. That's how I feel. So, unfortunately, I have to give, You know, I can't watch that movie on its own. Maybe if you just watched it on its own, you would say, well, on its own, it wasn't that bad. Lauren thought it was a pretty decent movie, but she's never really read the books like I have. So, hate to have to do that, but it is what it is. So, that's my review of Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark, the movie that has just come out. Well, as you know, I do have plenty of things that I have to get into. This month is going to be busy doing TV stuff, but, you know, I am producing a fundraiser for the Nevada SPCA, a no-kill shelter, on Saturday, September the 7th of 2019 here in Las Vegas. And the reason is, okay, well, let me first tell you that we're going to do a Creepy Vegas Ghost and UFO show that night, and 100% of the proceeds are going to go to the Nevada SPCA. I'm not taking out little fees and taxes and all this crap. No. Whatever you buy will go to the Nevada SPCA in addition to what I contribute. And on September 20th is when this Raid Area 51 thing is being planned. And I'm getting so much publicity for this right now. I figure, you know what? I need to do something that's really positive with this. And Lauren and I, we have had many adopted pets over the past 20 years. And we really believe strongly that that's a good thing to do, to go out and adopt a pet at a no-kill shelter. And so, and I've done various other pet fundraisers and, you know, stuff like that over the years. And so it seemed to me like, you know, I've been watching the TV around here, and the Nevada SPCA has had some struggles recently, and they're doing some big modifications to their facilities and upgrading everything. And so Lauren and I went over there, we met everybody, we saw all the facilities, we met all the pets, and I realized, hey, you know, this is just one of those things that I'm in a position to do right now. It's good karma, it helps everybody, everybody feels good about it. As a matter of fact, this Tuesday, Fox 5 here in Vegas is doing a TV news segment about this. The news story's out there already. But if you want to participate in this, you know, if you've just been on the fence and you'd be like, yeah, one of these days I want to go see Joshua P. Warren's Creepy Vegas Ghost and UFO show, and you just haven't gotten around to it, well, go ahead and get your ticket right now for Saturday, September 7th, 2019, at 7 p.m. They're at the Millennium Fandom Bar downtown. It's right near the Pawn Stars Pawn Shop and Zach Bagans Haunted Museum. It's within walking distance of those famous destinations. And the cool thing is, you get to come in, see the show, knowing that all your money is going to this no-kill animal shelter. And then after that, well, the bar, you know, this is a cosplay bar, and the theme of that night is going to be animals and pets, and so you're going to have this whole place just crammed full, decked out with people who are dressed up in animal themes as we continue to raise money that night. So if you want to get a ticket, go to creepyvegas.com, creepyvegas.com. And buy your ticket for Saturday, September the 7th, 2019, and contribute to this and know that it's good karma for you and everybody else. Another thing I want to point out, if you have not checked out the options for listening to this podcast, Joshua P. Warren Daily, look at this. Okay, right now, you can listen to this podcast on the following apps. Okay, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, Overcast, Pocket Cast, Castro, Castbox, Podchaser, and then there's an RSS feed, or you can just go straight to the website. There are so many different ways that you can listen to this, And the great thing is, you know, I'm not sure when I'll be able to post another one. Hopefully, I'll be able to do one in a couple of days because, as you know, I'm doing a lot of filming the rest of this month, and that puts me in a, well, a very weird schedule. But that said, you should know this is an uncensored independent podcast. Now, how cool is it that you can listen to an uncensored independent commercial-free podcast through all these different platforms nowadays? I mean, back in the day, if you wanted people to hear you all over the world, you would have to be partnered up with some big corporation where they're going to come in and tell you what you can and cannot talk about. And often the FCC is involved and they're going to tell you what you can and cannot talk about. This is a golden era of free speech, and we have to take full advantage of that. So, listen. If you go to joshuapwarren.com, there's no period after the P. If you go to joshuapwarren.com, click the link to the Curiosity Shop, buy some stuff there that you're not going to find anywhere else in the world, and help support this podcast. But regardless, just keep listening. Share it with your friends. Tell them to go to joshuapwarren.com. Click the link to this podcast, Joshua P. Warren Daily, because once again, it's always short, it's always free, it's commercial free, it's independent, it's uncensored. And when you click that link, you can subscribe through all those different services, or you can just follow me on Twitter at Joshua P. Warren, at Joshua P. Warren, and I will usually tweet when a new one is available. So I have so much more to tell you about, so many updates to give you. I'm about to go to fucking super haunted place and do something that has never been done before. You're going to hear about it first, so make sure that you're listening to this podcast. That said, thank you for listening. Thank you for your interest and support. Thank you for staying curious. And I will talk to you again soon.